ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 11, entitled Jada Bharat Instructs King Rahugana. Verse number 3. Natasya Tattva Grahanaya Sakshat Variyasirapi Vacha Samasan. स्वप्ने निरुक्त्या गृहमेधि सौख्यम् नयस्य हेयानुमितं स्वयं स्यात् न तस्य तत्त्वग्रहणाय साक्षात् वरीयसीरपि वाच समासन् स्वप्ने निरुक्त्या गृहमेधि सौख्यम् नयस्य हेयानुमितं स्वयं स्यात् न तस्य तत्त्वग्रहणाय साक्षात् वरीयसीरपि वाच समासन् स्वप्ने निरुक्त्या गृहमेधि सौख्यम् नयस्य हेयानुमितं स्वयं स्यात् न तस्य तत्त्वग्रहणाय साक्षात् वरीयसीरपि वाच समासन् स्वप्ने निरुक्त्या गृहमेधि सौख्यम् नयस्य हेयानुमितं स्वयं स्यात्।
Word to word translation responsibly. Na.
No.
Tasya. Of him. A student studying the Vedas. Tattva grahanaya. For accepting the real purpose of Vedic knowledge. Sakshat. Directly. Variyasihi. Very exalted. Api. Although. Vachaha. Words of the Vedas. Samasan, sufficiently become. Swapne, in a dream. Niruktya, by example. Grihamedhi saukhyam, happiness within this material world. Na, not. Yasya, of him, who? Heya anumitam, concluded to be inferior. Swayam, automatically. Syat, become. Translation: a dream becomes automatically known to a person as false and immaterial. And similarly, one eventually realizes that material happiness in this life or the next, or on this planet or a higher planet, is insignificant. When one realizes this, the Vedas, although an excellent source, insufficient to bring about direct knowledge of the truth. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In Bhagavad Gita 2.45, Krishna advised Arjuna to become transcendental to the material activities impelled by the three material modes of nature. Traigunya, Vishaya, Veda, Nishtar, Traigunyo, Bhavarjuna. The purpose of Vedic study is to transcend the activities of the three modes of material nature. Of course, in the material world, the mode of goodness is accepted as the best, and one can be promoted to the higher planetary system by being on the Sattagun platform. However, there is not perfection. One must come to the conclusion that even the Sattagun platform is also not good. One may dream that he has become a king with a good family, wife and children, but immediately at the end of the dream, he comes to the conclusion that it is false. Similarly, all kinds of material happiness are undesirable for a person who wants spiritual salvation. If a person does not come to the conclusion that he has nothing to do with any kind of material happiness, he cannot come to the platform of understanding the absolute truth or tattva jnana. Karmis, jnanis and yogis are after some material elevation. The karmis work hard day and night for some bodily comfort, and the jnanis simply speculate about how to get out of the entanglement of karma and merge into the Brahman effulgence. The yogis are very much addicted to the acquisition of material perfection and magical powers. All of them are trying to be materially perfect, but a devotee very easily comes to the platform of Nirguna in devotional service. And consequently, for the devotee, the results of karma, jnana and yoga become very insignificant. Therefore, only the devotee is on the platform of tattva jnana, not the others. Of course, the jnani's position is better than that of the karmis, but the position is also insufficient. The jnani's must actually become liberated, and after liberation, he may be situated in devotional service. Mat bhaktim labhade param. Om jnana timiranthasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamahyam dadati sva padantikam vandeham shri guru Shriyuta Padagamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunadhanyutam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaghanyutamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tattakanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanusute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vanchakalpadarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavani Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Bhutair Mahabhir Yaima Puro Vibhu Nirmaya Shete Yadamusha Purusha Bhumte Gunan Shodasha Shodasha Atmaka Soram Prashishta Bhagavan Vacham Sime. Hare Krishna. This teaching of Jadabharat is very significant in the current context, in the Vedic context, and specifically even the context in which Jadabharat is instructing Maharaj Rahugana. First, let's look into the context of Maharaj Rahugana being instructed by Jadabharat. King Rahugana, even though he was on the throne, on the position of a king, still he was a jnani. Indeed, King Rahugana chastised Jadabharat very sarcastically. When that happened, Jadabharat took a very humble position, still he corrected the king. Then one could ask this question, how could the king be a jnani? Because he became angry and he chastised Jadabharat, a realized soul. Thus, it is explained that it is the position of a king to be in Rajogun, at least sometime, being a Kshatriya. And then only he can correct. And indeed, he corrected but a wrong person. He happened to be a self-realized soul. So in that way, King Rahugana manifested the mode of passion, Rajogun. At the same time, inside was a jnani. So he had some understanding of the Absolute. Very preliminary, but he had some understanding of the Absolute. And he was more situated in the mode of goodness, in Sattugun. And so, when Jadabharat spoke Tattvagyan to Maharaj Rahugana, just hearing one verse, he jumped out from the palanquin and paid prostrated humble obeisances in front of Jadabharat and accepted him as his spiritual master. So if one is completely in the mode of passion, we can understand that such a humility will not be manifested. But that is not the case. He had a base of Sattvagun. So he was a jnani kind of person. And so immediately he could recognize Jadabharat from the first verse itself. After hearing the initial instructions itself, he could recognize who is this person and accepted him as his spiritual master. So this is a good part of Sattvagun. So he could accept the spiritual master by his good fortune. There is a context we can see. Here the Sattvagun is mentioned. However, when we see this instruction, we can see that Jadabharat wants to elevate King Rahugana beyond Sattvagun. So he is predominantly in Sattvagun, but now Jadabharat wants to elevate him beyond Sattvagun. And that's how he is mentioning very important verse that it is when one realizes that there is no happiness in the material world, in this world or in the higher material realms like Swargalokas, if one realizes that, then the Vedic instructions deem no significance. The Vedic instructions are no more significant for such a person who wants to transcend even the mode of goodness. So we can see how very systematically Jadabharat is instructing Maharaj Raghugana, because previously he instructed about the soul. Many examples or many analytical presentations were given to instruct Raghugana that we are not the body, we are not the mind, we are not the subtle body, we are beyond, we are the spiritual self. So that was instructed, and now he is addressing the specific conditioning of King Raghugana, because his specific conditioning is the mode of goodness of the guru, because he is a jnani, even though in the form of a king. So he is addressing the specific problem of the king. So mentioning, you may be situated in the mode of goodness, but that is not the end of it. That can be a conducive platform, but there is things beyond that. So that is the current context in which Jadabharat instructed King Raghugana. Given that, when we look into the purport, the first sentence or first words of the purport are referring to Bhagavad Gita. Specific instructions on this by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. Second chapter of Bhagavad Gita is so amazing, isn't it? Contents of the Gita summarized. If you just pick the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and if you understand the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we can get the summary of entire Bhagavad Gita. Indeed, this is the Vedic style of writing. Even Jadabharat speaks the Vedic kind of presentation, initially presenting the understanding of the soul and then building on that and finally coming to the devotional service, service to Guru, etc. Jadabharat also follows similar pattern. So when we pick Bhagavad Gita, first chapter is an intro to the entire Bhagavad Gita, and the second chapter is the summary. Everything is there in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Starting from soul to devotional service, to mind control, to karma kanda, everything is presented in the second chapter. And in one sense, different yogas are also present in a very succinct fashion in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In that way, we can see the second chapter is so important, and here an important verse is quoted from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that is Traigunya Vishya Veda Nishtaraigunyo Bhavarjuna. If we understand this verse, and if we try to understand the teachings of Lord Krishna in the context of the Vedas, it is revolutionary. Because Bhagavad Gita has 18 chapters with 700 verses. And in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita itself, that is second chapter itself, Krishna rejects the materialistic aspects of Vedas. So that's why I mentioned this verse is very significant in the Vedic context, because if we try to understand the Vedic context, it has a lot of connections to rituals. And those who are from India, Srila Prabhupada says there is at least some remnants of Vedas, right, in India. Prabhupada says that remnants of Vedas, Srila Prabhupada compares to what? Dead elephant. Not just an elephant, dead elephant. So Prabhupada said, even there is some use of dead elephant, because the tusk is useful, it's very wealthy. So some use of dead elephant, but indeed the elephant is dead. So it is applicable to not just India, wherever the Indian culture is there. Right? There is a dead elephant, you can see. Some remnants of Vedic culture. And in this Vedic culture, these ritualistic ceremonies are given so much of importance. The Karmakanda is given so much of importance, and this Karmakanda or materialistic activities or materialistic religiosities can overshadow the real religion or Sanatana Dharma or Bhakti. And we can see, even in our life, we have also gone through this materialistic way of religion a lot. So it can be in the Vedic tradition, and if you go to other traditions, there also we can see materialistic religiosity. So if there is any problem, there is not a spiritual solution, there is a religious solution. Alright? Therefore, everything. I still remember, I was a young boy and I had a certain kind of fever, can't remember. And it was going on. I was hospitalized, then came out from the hospital. So my mother prayed to a demigod. a particular demigod, and told, if my son get recovered, we will give you an offering. And he will do that offering. And that offering was very interesting for me, and really liked that offering, by the way. So it was to Lord Ganesh, and it was 108 coconuts offered to Lord Ganesh that were thrown in front of him. You know that if you are from South India, you might have done that. It's a very, very auspicious thing to do. So then we went to the Ganesh temple, and there is a specific stone is there right in front. And I already had heard from others, if you throw the coconut, if the coconut cuts into straight half, two pieces, half, symmetrical, then it is very, very auspicious. So then I would look at it, as a young boy, I'll take first coconut, look at the stone, aim at the stone. That time I used to play cricket. So I had a good idea how to throw things. So I used to look at that, boom, one stone and it broke into two pieces. And I managed to even throw many of them half, one throw into two pieces, not just many pieces. So I was quite happy and I really liked. I said, I don't want any help. I will throw all 108 coconuts. If such kinds of offerings are there, we really like it. Correct? So I really had a good time. So indeed, we can see that these kind of rituals are part of Vedic life. So this is just in Kali Yuga, maybe a few years back, few decades back, this happened. Now you go few hundred years of back or thousands of years back. So here we are talking about the story thousands of years back or probably millions of years back. It's a very old story because this fifth canto, I don't know which manantara is running. I don't think seventh canto we can see Chakshusha, the sixth. So this is not even a Chakshusha, not even sixth manantara. So safely we can say this is millions of years back. Okay, so this happened, and you can try to understand the role of these Vedic rituals at that point in time. How significant they were. Everyone used to follow. If you are a pious person, you would certainly follow Vedic rituals. And there was this strong conception of elevation to heavenly planets, to Sargaloka. Now also India people say, you know, you can go to the Sarga. If you do devotional service, people say you can go to Sarga. Because that is their understanding. Many of them, they just limit there. Now, in this Vedic times, it was so prominent. And they used to tolerate any difficulties for one lifetime, because at the end of that lifetime, they know they can be promoted to heavenly planets where they could live for thousands and thousands of years enjoying the senses. So a tolerance of a few years they used to consider okay. Can you see? Now we don't even have that tolerance, right? In the Kali Yuga, even if you say Swarga, still it is very difficult. One can tolerate for a very short time, and we want all the material results now itself, even if they perform Vedic ritualistic activities. So try to understand the context, the Vedic context in which the ritualistic activities were so prominent and so widespread. To the degree that if a Vedic ritualistic sacrifice was performed, like a Homa or a big Havan, then the demigods would personally arrive there. And the people, the subjects in the kingdom, they can see demigods arriving, accepting different offerings. Think about that. Really, it gives a lot of faith in the Vedic rituals, isn't it? The demigods directly coming. You know, for her, you know, the Brahma is coming, Shiva is coming, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu, boom, everyone in front of you. And they are effulgent. And we offer things, they are accepting everything. And it used to happen. It was the norm of previous ages. This, we are speaking about a different manantra altogether. But even the previous ages, demigods used to personally come and accept these offerings. So that's why I'm trying to say how prominent these rituals were. So it is not just like many times current priests would do, you know, they are after dakshina, you know, the donation, they are after donation. I went to one temple and I heard two pujaris speaking. Look, I went there, did that puja, but donation was so bad. I will never go again. You understand? So, I was thinking, oh, okay, this is the heart, heart of a Brahmana. Okay, so this is how it is. And one day I went to another one temple in Melbourne, and I was not a devotee. Okay, I was not a devotee. I went to that temple, and there were many demigods in the temple. So I went in front of one small altar, and I was standing there, okay, about to pray. Suddenly, I saw one person coming, looks quite aristocratic, and gave a donation to the pujari. Pujari went inside, and I'm just hearing. Suddenly, I heard the prayers that are going on in partially Sanskrit. 7-Eleven, upari upari, Indian restaurant, upari upari. Oh my God, I heard, okay, 7-Eleven, they are selling meat. Indian restaurant, definitely there is meat. Upari upari means, you know, let everything flourish. So he's praying to the demigod, you know, all this meat eating, all these things, okay, flourish, flourish. Okay, I was thinking, okay, it doesn't sound very good. But this is how the ritualistic ceremonies are in this world. What can we do? So currently also, those who are from Vedic background are attached to ritualistic ceremonies. They want to see, as one of my friends was telling, if I come to the temple and I want to do a puja, and there has to be a fire sacrifice, and lot of fire and lot of smoke should come. And I said, you know, can you please explain, what do you mean? He said, smoke will enter the eyes, you know, we can see we are getting purified. So that is the whole purpose of this Vedic sacrifice. The whole thing is fire they want to see, and the eyes should burn, and then okay, everything is good. The people want some show, then only people accept certain things, right? So these are part of the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. And when Krishna came, Krishna rejected this kind of materialistic religiosity. So Krishna made a revolution, if you see. Krishna's teachings are revolutionary. Second chapter itself, Krishna rejects. Krishna says, you know, Yavan artha udabane sarvada sampludo duke, tavan sarveshu vedeshu brahmanasya vichanataha. Very important verse, right? He made it clear, look, if there is a small well, and if there is a big reservoir of water, if you have the full reservoir of water, then you don't need the small well. A small well has some water, but that purpose can be fulfilled if you have a big reservoir of water. In the same way, these Vedic rituals are unnecessary if you really know the purpose of Vedas. And the purpose of Veda is devotion service. Developing love for the Lord. That is the whole purpose. And these ritualistic ceremonies don't have any significance if we really know what is the whole purpose of the Vedas. The real purpose is that this Vedic Karma Kanda ceremonies are given so that one may develop a little bit of faith in the Vedas, and then they can understand that, okay, there is something beyond, that is, we are not just this body, there is no point in materialistic attachments, or we as the soul, we are connected to Krishna, and then one can come to the platform of devotion service. That is the whole purpose. So Krishna says, there is no purpose of all these materialistic rituals if one can come to devotion service, if one can come to chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. There also we are sacrificing. We are pouring swaha is there. What is that? We are, the sound vibration is coming from our mouth. And what is the yajna kund? That is the ears. So through the ears we have to hear. So that is the real process. So that is the real process. That is the real sacrifice. When we hear Krishna's holy name, it is purifying because it is directly going into the heart. So there is a whole sacrifice already happening in our heart. So we don't necessarily need an external sacrifice, but our main sacrifice is internal. And if we just see the sacrifice of this age, it is so potent, it is so powerful, chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So Krishna goes on further. He says, Yadate moha kalilam buddhir vedi tarishadi tada gandhasi nirvedam shrodavyasya shrodasecha. He says, he makes actually a joke out of materialistic karmakanda activities. What he compares to, when your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. What is that? This Vedic karmakandas are compared to dense forest. How is that? Dense forest of material existence. Because this kind of rituals are only keeping us in this material world, and it's not helping us to go beyond that. And that's why it is mentioned here very clearly, we had to go beyond the Sattvagun. We had to come to the devotional platform, and that we have already. We have already. Srimad Bhagavatam rejects in the second verse itself, right? Third verse, right?
Second.
What is the beginning? Yes, second verse. Dharma Projita Kaidavotra Paramam Nirmatsaranam Sadam Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu Shivadam Tavatrayon Mulanam. Beginning itself, rejecting second verse. Dharma Projita means Srila translated as kicking out. Kicking, he doesn't say just rejecting, kicking out, completely rejecting, complete rejection. Pro Ujjida. Pra means complete. Ujjida means just rejecting. Pro Ujjida means complete rejection of this materialistic, ritualistic activities. Why? Because we have something superior. That is Krishna. This is so attractive. So why do we want just rituals? So that is the beginning of the purport. However, this purport and this verse makes a very important point. And this point is a pillar to our success in bhakti. It is a very significant point to our success in bhakti. What is that? Can anyone tell that point in simple fashion? Can anyone tell one of the most important points you get from this translation and this purport?
You have to know Krishna.
Yes, that is the ultimate. But here, purport has its mood, so it's giving very significant point. Did anyone notice? Very important point. Or if you just read the translation, you can get that important point. Yes.
The material happiness and spiritual advancement go together.
Yes. So here, exact point is one has to realize that material happiness, whatever degree we have, is insignificant. And purport makes it very clear that this is the point from which we can make spiritual advancement. So, or in a devotee's life, one has to come to a point that all material happiness are insignificant. Please think about this point. It is very, very important, because that makes this verse very profound. The reason is we have very wrong conception of material happiness. We have a faulty conception of material happiness. Isn't it? Just think about ourselves. Just reflect on ourselves. Something nice materially comes, or if we think about material happiness, we get excited. Or we think it's really good. It's a very natural point in our life. It's our default position of our mind. This is, however, the fault of the mind. And this verse is exposing this fault of our mind. That material happiness in whatever shape or form is insignificant. This is very important. And we can see in our Krishna conscious society, in our Krishna conscious practices, we have to realize this progressively. That's the reason. We have to deal with our gross and subtle attachments when we practice Krishna consciousness, isn't it? As the first step, we are told, follow four regulatory principles. In one sense, to follow this four regulatory principles, externally, it is not that difficult. No meat eating, you don't find it very difficult, right? No intoxication, it's okay, we can manage, we don't find it so difficult. No gambling, no illicit sex, one can manage this. However, if we go to a subtle level, even these principles can become very difficult to follow. So that's how, when we deal with material desires in an external level and internal level, deeper level, there are different degrees. And there are different degrees of difficulties to deal with them. So externally we can say, you know, a devotee can say, look, I can be, initially we will be very attached to money, making a lot of money, for example, having a big house, maybe possessions and positions. A devotee can be quite attached to these kind of things, but these kind of things can easily be shaken off as one chants Hare Krishna Mahamantra, right? It's not that difficult. One may think, you know, look, I'm okay with what I need. I need a comfortable house. It's not that I had to show off the biggest house in Melbourne. Right? It is okay, it is possible. One may be attached, look, I want to make my children, you know, the best in terms of academia. Initially there can be some kind of attachment, but as a devotee progresses, one understands, look, we'll give them a chance to be a devotee. We'll give them a chance to advance materially. Then it is their choice. We give all the facilities, but result is not up to us. One becomes detached as one progresses in bhakti. One will not hold on to our material status or our children's material status. Because that these two are the biggest things without Krishna consciousness, right? Our material status and the coming generation's material status. Very big thing without Krishna consciousness. However, if you want to go in a deeper level, it can be challenging. Even for regulative principles, if you want to go to the deepest level, there are its own challenges. So, even when we talk about the attachments, we have the attachment, we want to be known, we want to take credit, we want to be known, we want to be heard. You know, these are very subtle attachments. We want our position, not externally, but internally we feel that we want to be respected, at least to some degree. These are subtle attachments and it's very difficult to give up. Even if one performs devotional service for so many years, still they are difficult, subtle attachments to give up. Right? So we had to deal with that though. So that's why some are gross and some are subtle. And in the life of Jadabharat, we can see that as a realized soul, he had given up even those subtle attachments. How his brothers were treating him? Just like a useless fellow, as a dumb fellow. Did he protest? No. It's a big thing if you think about it. They gave him kind of stale food even, still he accepted as amrita, as nectar. He didn't complain. And they gave him the job of a scarecrow, still Jadabharat, a realized soul, accepted that position. He didn't complain. He just continued. So this is a very advanced platform. When even someone insults, or in this case, even the dacoits tried to kill him, still he didn't protest. Durga Devi protested, but he didn't protest. So we can see, even all these conditions, he's acting with complete indifference and complete detachment. So Jadabharat is demonstrating those qualities. And as King Bharata in the previous birth, then also he showed detachment. Even though he was young, he had all the wealth, he was the king, still he gave up everything as useless and went to the forest to perform devotional service. So indeed, he manifested all these kinds of detachment. Sorry. Now, when it comes to our lives, how can we apply this principle? That we also need to have some detachment, otherwise we won't be able to be steady in devotional service, isn't it? If you are completely attached, then we can't make any progress. So we have to work out how to do that. So in this regard, we can see in presence of material happiness and in presence of temptations, we have to see, are we falling for it or are we able to resist? Are we able to use our mind for something superior rather than being succumbed to the material temptations? This is a test for a devotee. And these are gradual tests in our life, isn't it? Very gradual test. Initially, even we may take a vow, look, I will not eat anything other than prasadam. We have heard the glories of prasadam so much and it tastes very good. So I take a promise, I will not eat anything other than prasadam. I will cook, I will offer and I will eat, but I will not eat outside. So it takes some time. There will be temptations, but we have to resist those temptations. Why? Because it is for Krishna. It is to please Krishna. Krishna will be very pleased. He is a person. If you do something, someone does something for you to please you, then you will be very happy with such a person. If somebody is doing something for you to please, you will be pleased and you will be very happy for that person. Similarly, if you take any steps or if you resist some of the temptations, understand that Krishna will be pleased by that. He is a person. He is looking, oh look, such and such devotee, he is taking a step towards me. He is doing some sacrifice for me and he will be very pleased with that. This is the position of Krishna. He'll be very pleased. If we keep our phone away while chanting, Krishna will be very pleased. It's a simple thing, but Krishna will be very pleased. Because look, he wants to check the phone all the time. Look, every 5 minutes, okay, this message, yeah, that looks interesting. Or maybe a swipe here, or swipe there. So if you keep the phone away and start chanting, Krishna will be pleased. So simple things, but these kind of things can help us to make us advanced in bhakti. Rather than we spend hours of browsing this and that, no, we are taking and we complain, oh, no time to read Prabhupada's books. No time, very busy. So see how we are spending time. So when you see, okay, we are spending time for useless things, we remove some of those things, then we can understand that we are making progress in bhakti. If you see, are they simple things? They're very simple things, isn't it? If the mind is going on and on with nonsense things, you hear your phone, just press the button, okay, play a kirtan or listen a lecture. Is it very difficult? Really speaking, it's not very difficult, but spur of that moment, it looks very difficult. Is it right? When we are in front of, when we are confronted with material desires, then to take a spiritual choice looks very difficult. So that is there. So we had to accept. But we had to be prepared for that. In fact, in this connection, because there is the description of material modes in this purport, there is a very interesting verse from the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 19th verse, which is about the modes of material nature. So Krishna says, Nanyam gunaibhya kartaram yada dashtanu pasyadi gunaibhyascha param veti mat bhavam so adhigachadi. It's a very important verse. When one properly sees that in all activities, no other performer is at work than these modes of nature, and he knows the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. So here are two things. When we have material desires, or when we are in front of maybe a challenging material situation, or in front of material happiness to indulge, then we understand, one, it is insignificant, and by taking shelter of Krishna, I can resist. And understand these are just the activities of material nature. If we understand that, and if we connect to Krishna by calling out to Krishna, or distracting ourselves and engaging in any form of Krishna conscious activities, then Krishna says that such a person can attain Krishna's nature. What is Krishna's nature? One can go back home, back to Godhead. So in presence of temptation, one can just resist that and think about Krishna. That can help us to go on the path of liberation to Krishna. So two sides. One is resisting material temptation and then connecting to Krishna. Our all bhakti process is based on these two principles. We say no to material temptations and we say yes to Krishna. Everything is based on that, isn't it? Smartavya satatam Vishnu vismartavya na jaduji sarva vidhi nishedhyoho etayo eva kinkara. The whole Krishna conscious principles are based on two principles. What is? Never forget Krishna and always remember Krishna. Both are same. Right? So this is the whole principle. Everything is based on these simple things. Now, when we apply this principle to our life, let's have a positive vision about devotional life. Let's have a positive vision about our bhakti life. Rather than, oh, it's all about resisting. So bhakti life is about success. So we need to redefine our success. When we redefine our success, please try to understand that we don't have to be big devotees. We don't have to do big things in devotion service, but success of a devotee is by doing small things in a good fashion. Do the small things rightly, then one can be successful in bhakti. I'll give you examples. One, if we come to Mangalarati and if we see the beautiful form of the Lord, understand that that is a success in bhakti itself. We are seeing the beautiful form of the Lord and try to absorb that beautiful form of the Lord to our mind. That is the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Please try to understand. We are following the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita by doing that. What is that? Manmana Bhava Mat Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. Krishna repeats the first line of this verse twice in Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th chapter and the 18th chapter. So just by seeing the beautiful form of the Lord in Mangalarati or Darshanarati or now, what are we doing? We are becoming successful in bhakti. So one small thing, but succeed in that small thing. You see, it is so beneficial, isn't it? Seeing the beautiful form of the Lord take to our heart. It is so beneficial. Second, if you are singing Guru Ashtakam or Guru Vandana prayers, please pray to the spiritual master, pray to Srila Prabhupada. Isn't it powerful? While chanting Guru Ashtakam, if you can meditate on the meaning of Guru Ashtakam, your mind is already transformed. Guaranteed. Because it is very advanced. It is so amazing. So, just try to understand the meaning and meditate on that. Same while Tulsi Arati is going on. Please meditate on the meaning of Tulsi Arati. It is very advanced. Our heart is already transformed when we do that. So, what I am trying to say is, such as small things, they are not big things, but we can find success in small aspects of devotional service. Then we sit to chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra. We offer the 10 prayers, or we chant the 10 offenses, and we say, okay, we don't want to commit any of those offenses. Think about it. They are very profound. And when we sit to chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra, if you hear one Mahamantra, understand, this is success. Our mind is able to focus on one mantra. Like that, try to hear one mala, 108 times of Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Try to hear most of the mantras. It's a big success in our devotional life. Continue that for the entire 16 months. If not, whatever we could hear, it's a success in itself. Can you see? And if we perform any other devotional service, maybe cleaning the courtyard, cleaning the temple, anytime, do it properly with proper consciousness, then we can find purification then and there itself. Can you understand? So, there is success in each and every activities of bhakti. It's not just at the end, or it's not by doing a big project or being famous, but by doing simple activities rightly. One can make advancement in bhakti. So that time we are resisting, as it is mentioned, different kinds of material distractions in terms of the mind is telling, these are material happiness we have to attend to. We are saying no. While we are chanting, the mind is telling, think about that is better. That will make you happier. We are saying no. We are coming back to hearing the holy name. Can you see? So in the progressive bhakti, each and every step we have to understand that any form of material happiness is not significant compared to my devotional service. Then one can make real bhakti. So there are small steps in our life, but that can give us big success in bhakti. These are small steps that can give us big success. That is the potency of devotional service. And in this purport, which can be seen very nicely. So initially I explained about the Vedic rituals and how bhakti is above Vedic rituals, above the three modes of material nature. Nirguna, Prabhupada explains in the purport, a devotee can come to Nirguna platform very easily by devotional service. And to succeed in devotional service, we had to accept that any form of material happiness of any degree is insignificant. And that can be proven, or we will be tested moment by moment. So we have to make progress in bhakti by succeeding in our daily devotional life. Don't worry about a big project or something going to happen in our life, or I am going to shift to the dham. Don't worry about that. Succeed now. Today. Now. So that is bhakti. So I conclude here and see if there are any questions or comments. So you can give a microphone.
Hare Krishna. Narada Ji did the same thing. He chastised Virajas. But Virajas was not happy. He chastised because he was not giving the
same. Yes, thank you. Good example of Narada Muni correcting Virajas. Yeah. Anyone else? Yes, Jignesh.
Thanks for the class, Prabhupada. So you mentioned about the, you know, having the opulence or happiness or exact word, which make us deluded and keep us away from Krishna consciousness. But how about some material comfort or but how about sometimes material discomforts also, and you know, takes us away or it affects our spiritual life, and that can be at cross level or subtle level. So maybe physical, or as you said, like, you know, sometimes a certain level, you know, getting some insult or like that makes us, you know, that affects our spiritual well-being at certain level. So how can we, you know, what should be our tendency, or how can we digest that properly so that it won't affect our, as you already given the example of Jadwara, even though he was being humiliated by his brothers, but he didn't react, or like, you know, he was always in his meditation house. So how can we follow the same thing practically in our life?
2 points. First one is the most important, that is, never leave the association of devotees. Be in the strong association of the devotees. So that is significant. So that can keep us protected. Very important. That is, if you ask about everything in bhakti, that is the one thing that is going to save us. That, if you go away from that, then we are finished. Again, the example of Jada Bharat Maharaj is used by Srila Prabhupada to explain this point. He went away from the association of the devotees. Srila Prabhupada says that, okay, that is one reason for his fall down. That is one very important point. Second, bhakti is not about complete detachment. So if one is completely detached, general process called jnana. And completely attached, that's called karma. These are the two processes one picks. So bhakti is in between. So a devotee needs some comforts. We don't accept unnecessary austerities. So we need some comforts that we accept, so that we can do our sadhana. So in the association of the devotees, with proper guidance, we understand what we really need, rather than just our mind taking us for a ride. Say, one may need a comfortable house to live. We don't deny that fact. One may need a proper bed to sleep. We don't deny that fact. For a jnani, no. Sleep on a wood, or if you want to be austerities, just on a grass. We don't do that. So some comforts are required, but we need some guidance to understand where we can draw the line. So there also the association of the devotees becomes significant. Because they are the only one, they are the only real friends. Because devotees really want us to make progress. Correct? Because at the end of the day, the devotees are trying to make progress, go to Krishna, serve Krishna. Similarly, they want others also to do that. So they are the real friends. So we have to understand that fact. Does that answer the question? Yeah.
Sorry,
just
yeah. Like, if we have some disease, we go to doctor or hospital. But then sometimes we have problem with the doctor itself, or like, you know, it can be possible with or some hospital staff. Then the problem, the secondary problem is more severe than the actual disease, you know, sometimes. Because then you have direct problem with the hospital staff or your doctor who is treating you.
So that's the reason, good point, that's the reason we had to understand, we are all in the hospital. ISKCON is a hospital. And the real doctor is Srila Prabhupada. And we cannot have any problem with Srila Prabhupada. Can you have any problem with Prabhupada? No. You know? So the real doctor is there, and we don't have any problem with our doctor. And we don't have any problem with the instructions of the doctor also. Because it's perfect. Everything coming is perfect source. Then we have to understand where things are going wrong. There can be problems in application. If there is a problem in application, there can be problems. Then there can be patients Some of the patients can be very obediently following the doctor, and other patients can be quite nasty, and you know, they can be fighting with the doctor. So if you go to a hospital, you can see who follows and who do not. Then we can choose our association, where we have some association with people who we can deal with. No problem. It's not that if in a spiritual community, everyone will be our close friends. It's not going to happen. We are not expecting that. So according to our nature, there will be a few people, Krishna will send, who you can be friends with. That's all that we need. And who we can take guidance. So it is our responsibility to find such an association. It's our responsibility. We cannot blame anyone else. So then we had to work around. Then that person and that devotee will help you. Okay, how to deal with others also. So we had to be very clear. It's our responsibility to find such association. Even because thousands of devotees are there. We cannot say there's nobody who is going to listen to you. Correct or not? So in that way, we had to be very careful. Because this is the tricks of Maya. Maya will play. Tell that, you know, it's not going to work. That person is not working, this is not working. So, nothing is going to work. That's the trick of Maya. That is generalizing. Just take one incident and then generalize for the entire thing for all the time. In that way, the Maya, the material energy will keep us in its trap. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Guru. Yeah, speak to the microphone.
Probably, if someone has had bad habits before and now he starts chanting and following regulative principles, so sometimes bad patients come into mind to fulfill those bad habits. How to control that? And second point, when he's thinking about that, I usually do like this.
Yes.
I break this regulative principle.
Yes.
So is it simple at that time or?
Okay. Yeah, I got the question. One, because we all have conditioning, and when we start chanting, all these temptations will very easily come to our mind, and sometimes even strongly, because now you are saying no, so it will force us more. So that's how it is. We have accept that's how it is. Then suppose we can avoid certain circumstances. So we know that seeing certain things or in certain circumstances our mind can become very agitated or tempted. We consciously avoid such circumstances. Some people being alone, they feel like doing many things. So what they do? Just be with the devotees all the time, as much as one can. And if still the problems are there, devotees are not around, then go to the temple or try to be with the devotees or make a phone call to the devotees. In that way, one's mind is pacified. Can you see that? So we had to take some positive steps so that we can deal with our condition. So strong chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, understanding the philosophy properly, this really helps, because when the mind starts throwing different kind of demands, then the knowledge that we have in our mind will start speaking. See, tell, okay, I have heard this, it's not really good for me, I should try to resist. And okay, better by fighting alone, I can be with the devotees. Let me speak to the devotees. Look, these kind of thoughts are coming. What, how can I deal with? Many times a neophyte devotee may think, you know, all the senior devotees, they don't know about these kind of problems. But these problems are there for everyone, you understand? Oh, this problem only for me. How can I speak to anyone else? But everyone has gone through these kind of problems or going through these kind of problems. So nothing is new. So by the help of the devotees and taking to the process seriously, one can resist such kind of desires. Thank you. Okay, any final question? Otherwise we'll conclude here. You want a good morning.
Bhagavad Gita also we know that Krishna says that he is the purpose to know the Vedas. He is the lover of the Vedas, and the purpose of the Vedas is to know him. So, could you please explain in that way what means the Vedic literature being meaningless?
Yeah. The Vedic instructions are meaningless in the sense that the Karmakanda portion of the Vedic instructions are meaningless. Or the materialistic aspect of the Vedas are insignificant, meaningless. That's all. Krishna is the knower of Veda because the purpose of Karmakanda is to come to, or ritualistic ceremonies is to come to, finally to chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And as you know, in Kali Yuga, we cannot get caught up in the Karmakanda. So it's not at all recommended. So Vyasadeva straight away rejects by the instruction of Narada Muni, Vyasadeva rejects all the Karmakanda activities. Narada Muni chastises Vyasadeva for writing all the Puranas, glorifying different methods of worship for various demigods. Narada chastises Vyasadeva. Why did you do that? That's going to misdirect the humanity. So that is not meaningful. So when one understands, when progress in bhakti, then all these materialistic aspects of the Vedas, which is quite significant portion of the Vedas, that is Karmakanda, that is insignificant. That's all.
Not all the Vedas.
No, because other aspects are very useful.
Yeah,
is the cream of all the Vedic literature. So Krishna makes it very clear that it is about the Karmakanda. That's why here also it's been rejected. Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, Kevala Vishayar Bhanda. Narottam Das Thakur says, Karmakanda, it's a significant portion of the Vedas, by the way. Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, significant portion of the Vedas in terms of volume. And Keval Vishayar Bhanda. Keval, it is just Vishayar Bhanda. It's a bag of poison. So, Acharyas go even one step further. They say it is only Vishayar Bhanda, it is only a stock of poison. In that. And then they establish bhakti. So yes, bhakti is indeed part of the Vedas. Not only that, that is the meaning of Veda. So Brahmaji himself says, Vedescha durlabham adurlabham atma bhaktau. Brahma Samhita, right? Vedescha durlabham. You cannot get Krishna so easily from Vedas. Adurlabham atma bhaktau. But he can easily be obtained from his devotees. So that is Brahma's vision. Brahma is the real knower of Veda. Brahma is also knower of Veda. Because he is the Adikavi. He has Adikave Mukhyandi Yat Sureha. So, Brahma, Hridaye, Brahma means Vedas. Adikave, unto Adikavi. Who gave? The Supreme Lord. So, even Brahma says, after hearing all the Vedas, after studying all the Vedas, and he has all the Vedas personified next to him. Wherever Brahma goes, all the Vedas personified, they go with him. So Brahma has any doubt, ask the Vedas, they will speak. So Brahma has no problem. So in the fifth canto itself, when King Priyavrata was performing austerities on top of Gandhamadana hill, Brahma came. So Brahma came, all the Vedas also came with him. See, so that's how it is. So even then Brahma says, Vedescha durlabham adurlabham atma bhakta. Still you cannot get Krishna so easily from Vedas, very difficult. So when we take to Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, then you can understand Krishna very easily, direct. So in short, if we come in touch with even Srila Prabhupada's small book, 70 pages, you can understand who Krishna is and what is devotional service, which is the Veda Guhyam, which is the secret of Veda, Raja Guhyam. The Bhagavad Gita also says Raja Guhyam, 9th chapter, Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, Pavitram, Idam Uttamam. Exactly.
Can I make a small comment?
Yeah, sure.
It's just more related to the point to understand that everything comes from Krishna, and the attitude of the rejecting this is not, or this is like, this is not favorable. In the beginning, can be useful for us to learn to acquire positive attitudes, or and then perhaps changing bad habits. But at the end, the idea. Understanding that everything comes from Krishna, understanding the nature of everything that sense will help us to deal with different factors or different elements in nature or in our environment, understanding the connection with Krishna.
Yes, certainly. That is matured way of knowing. Look, at the same time, then what is the matured way? Oh, look, we understand, we accept. Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, everything is part of Krishna. Krishna has given everything. We accept. We don't have any problem. But one can easily be misdirected. There is a strong possibility of misdirection. So Acharya says, just reject. You understand? So there is a mood in it. It's not just being nice to everything. They also understand that, look, Karma Kanda, Jnana, they are coming from Krishna. We accept. There is no doubt. And it has its purpose in a different age. That also we accept. But when one can be very much misdirected by those things, then what's the message? Just reject it for the time being. Just reject it. Don't worry about it. You do bhakti. So that's why Acharya makes it a very strong statement. And Krishna also says, you know, dense darkness of this forest. So Krishna also uses strong words. Krishna says, Trigunya Vishaya Veda. He just rejects practically saying. He is not accepting. You know, Trigunya, even though it's coming from, he's telling, you know, Trigunya Vishaya Veda. Nishta Trigunya. So he's telling, go beyond that. Reject it. So he also makes a strong statement. And Acharyas also makes strong statement. Why? Because to cut the attachment. But they don't leave it at that. Then they speak about Krishna. And as one develops some attraction for Krishna, then they can understand everything is connected to Krishna. It has its purpose in different ways. That's all right. But for the time being, no. So it depends on what is one's consciousness at that point. So certain points one has to cut, and some point one may be able to accept also. Everything, okay, it's connected, but I will not do it. So it depends on the maturity of the consciousness. So we cannot say one is better than the other. So these are different stages. So we also have to go through different stages.
Utility is a principle.
Eh?
Utility is a principle in
Bhakti. Yeah, utility is a principle. So certain things, yeah, certain things can be used, and certain things are difficult. So certain things we don't worry about it. As such, Karma Kanda, we don't worry about it. We don't do it, Karma Kanda. We don't need it, yeah. Jnana Kanda, we don't do it. We don't need it. So in that way, we don't use it. So when such things are required, even Karma Kanda ones, and say, for example, Shodash Kriya and, you know, all the ceremonies that are required for upbringing of children, including Namakaranam, etc., etc., you know, Gangeshwar Prabhu doing. So our Acharyas, what they do, they don't use Karma Kanda at all. They reject Karma Kanda. There is a process of how to first shaving the head, cutting the hair of the child, giving the name, etc., etc. So all processes are there. So our Acharyas, Gopalabhatta Goswami, he has written books about that. So it is not more Karma Kanda. It is completely bhakti. Because that becomes devotion process. All are calling the names of Krishna, and there is a devotional meaning in everything. So in that way, we replace everything with devotional processes. Okay. Thank you. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.